You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios in this edition of the show. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. Only one place to start today. Sixth place Spurs hosting fifth place Liverpool. And this match did not disappoint. Liverpool running out 3-1 winners for Firmino, Alexander-Arnold, Mane. The scores for Liverpool, Højbjerg with a brilliant goal for Spurs, but that's all they could muster. Liverpool then move into fourth. They jump West Ham, 4 points off the league lead. Spurs sit in sixth, 8 points behind league leaders Manchester City. Steve Nicol, Shaka Hislop, Jurgen Klinsmann with us. Stevie, how good were Liverpool today?
I think considering the team they had out, they were excellent. You talk about open attacking football, that's exactly what you got. You talk about creating chances, that's what you got. You got three goals, you got two disallowed, and you got other opportunities that maybe could have made this scoreline way bigger than it actually finished up. And that is with your fifth and sixth choice centre-backs. And in James Milner, 35-year-old, who's probably fourth choice in the middle of the park. I mean, what a performance, really, to go to Spurs and play the way they did and score the goals they did. Fantastic performance.
Jurgen, the attack has been slipping of late for Liverpool. What was the difference in this one?
Well, the difference was Liverpool created far more chances and finished them off as well. I mean, who knows what would have happened if Son's goal in the third minute would have been a regular goal, but it was rightfully so, it was disallowed. But if that would have been the lead for Spurs, maybe a different story. But I think then Liverpool really controlled the game. Scored three beautiful goals, even if Højbjerg, you know, brought a Spurs back. But they never created enough then throughout the whole 90 minutes. It was obviously a big blow to lose Harry Kane at halftime with injury again. So a deserved victory from Liverpool, a couple of outstanding performances from their side. I look at Thiago, first and foremost, he played an incredible game. And obviously they have their strikers back scoring that helps them a lot going forward.
Shaka, what do you come away from this match? More impressed with what Liverpool did or disappointed in Spurs' performance?
Well, more impressed with what Liverpool did, given the issues that Liverpool had coming into this one, as TV rightly pointed out. But at the same time, don't let that disguise the fact that I'm hugely disappointed with so much about Spurs and the performance today against this Liverpool team, who, you know, are kind of makeshift at times. I thought Spurs threatened to dominate the midfield because Liverpool don't have any real ball winners in their own midfield. As always with Son and Kane in their attacking lineup, they look so good on the counter-attack. Kane obviously has to come off. But then you look at what Liverpool did, or certainly Spurs allowed them to do. In the build-up to the first goal, Andy Robertson is allowed 10 yards into the Spurs half before anybody even thinks about getting close to him. Picks out the pass to the one player who's been running behind them all game long. And then it's a defensive mistake by Dier for the second goal. Lloris should have done better. For the third, Rodon should have done better. And in the end, despite the fact that if you're Spurs, maybe you can console yourself with the fact that the three goals were three defensive mistakes, Liverpool, despite all their issues, were by far the better of the two teams.
Jurgen, any issues with Spurs' approach?
Well, I think they started well. You know, they obviously almost scored the goal if it was allowed for Son. But then throughout the entire game, they didn't create enough. You know, Harry Kane, until he obviously was subbed out then because of the injury, was never really into the game. And it's just simply not enough, you know. And Liverpool looked like they could score, you know, every minute. I mean, Mane had a couple of opportunities already in the first half. And obviously, when you didn't have individual mistakes like it happened especially in the first two goals, then you really look bad at the end of the day.
Stevie?
So, Seb, you know, Spurs proved today that in order for them to win games, they can't go toe-to-toe with a proper football team. And we kind of knew that. You know, if they want to sit and put men behind the ball, then they can do that and they can break on you. But this became an open game. and they can't do it. And Josie's come out after the game and pretty much has not had one word of praise for Liverpool. All he said is, oh, all the mistakes they made. Well, I tell you, the mistakes they made is because of the pressure they were put under, because they were so open that the defenders can't handle it, and Liverpool scored goals. So, listen, Spurs to me today proved exactly what I thought. Toe-to-toe against a proper team, they're not good enough. They have to sit behind the ball and try and be clever and get it on the counter-attack.
Jurgen, isn't this what we've talked about for months on this show? As a Spurs fan, you're fine with what Mourinho's doing as long as they're top of the table, as long as they're winning. Now they're not winning. Two wins in their last eight in the Premier League. They're no longer top of the table. Have we reached that point with Mourinho where the frustration's going to start to set in?
No, I don't think that the frustration is starting to kick in, because obviously they're in the League Cup final and then they're in the other cup competitions as well. So there's still a lot of football to be played the next 5-6 months, you know. And obviously it looks now not so positive, absolutely, in the Premier League. I mean, you are 8 points behind Man City right now. You're in sixth place, and that doesn't look so good. I think the biggest fear I have, as a Spurs fan, is, you know, how to replace Harry Kane going forward the next couple of weeks. If he's really out for 5-6 weeks, so what are you going to do? Because you need a leader. Now, this Spurs team really needs a leader there on the field. I was curious when he will bring in Gareth Bale. You know, I was hoping maybe already at halftime, and giving the opportunity to slowly grow into that team and to take over a little bit of responsibility there. I mean, he's a big-time player. And that could be a kind of a solution, hopefully, for the team. But they badly need somebody now to guide them on the field and to push them and to give them positive energy.
Stevie, Bale gets 10 minutes today at a time when Spurs absolutely needed goals. Is he done?
Wow. I'm trying to come up with a reason to disagree that he's not done. I mean, has he played a full 90 minutes in the last two seasons? In a proper game, in the first team, whether Real Madrid, certainly not. I can't remember playing for 90 minutes for Real Madrid. He's got nowhere close to that at Tottenham. I think he's done as a big time player. I think everybody would agree with that. Can he contribute? Yes, I think he can contribute, but I don't think it's going to be for 90 minutes every time there's a game, whether it's Spurs or wherever he ends up playing.
Shaka, this would seem to be the proof that Mourinho can't find any use for Bale, can he?
That's the thing. And to your previous question, Seb, is he done? Certainly at Spurs, I think the implication in that question is that it started at some point. And I'm not sure it started at all for him since his return to Spurs. And listen, if you're 3-1 down and you're, I don't want to call him big money signing because it's a loan, didn't cost you anything, but this signing that I think everybody expected so much from just comes on in a token late effort. It says all you need to know, especially Harry Kane going off as early as he did. It says everything you need to know. And the trouble is, Mourinho, I don't think changes his stance. I don't see how it improves, given how stubborn we've seen Bale over the last two or three seasons. That's not great, because I was holding out hope that Gareth Bale would somehow refine form, add an attacking impetus to Spurs that I don't think we'd seen for long spells under Jose Mourinho. And none of that has come to fruition.
Right. A month ago, Spurs were top of the table. Now they're in sixth. Jurgen, if you look at the table now, right behind Spurs, you got Everton, you got Chelsea with the new manager, you got Aston Villa with a couple games in hand. How concerned are you that this team that was once atop the table might miss out completely on European football based on what we saw today?
I think we're all rightfully concerned, obviously. You know, getting in the top four in the Premier League is extremely, extremely difficult. And now having teams like, you know, even Everton being there, even West Ham is playing an outstanding season under David Moyes. So it's a lot of traffic up there in the top eight, top nine. There's a certain sign of alertness. I mean, there's definitely a lot of work for them to do. But I would also, going back a little bit to Gareth Bale, I would a little bit disagree, you know, because we cannot really understand, you know, the situation of Gareth, because we don't see him every day in training. We would need to see his training efforts. He played a full game, actually, in the FA Cup against Wycombe, scored a goal there. I think, you know, this is a question for Jose, obviously, you know, because at the end of the day, the work of a manager is, first and foremost, is people management. And And so when you're in the situation that you're missing now some players, and especially Harry Kane, if you miss a leader like Harry Kane now, then you know there's alarm going on, and you have to kind of figure out or find ways to bring in players now to make them strong, to make them big, that you have at your disposal. And if you have a Gareth Bale, maybe there's a way to figure it out and to work it out with him to come back to the top. I mean, as anything is doable. I think Gareth has a very, very good working attitude. He's very recognized within the locker room. It's his club. I mean, his heart is a Spurs heart. So I think there's still an opportunity there. I would not write Gareth Bale off at all, but certainly there's a lot of work ahead of Jose.
Stevie?
Jürgen, don't you think the answer to that question was in the substitute today? When you've got Harry Kane going off and you put on Eric Lamella in front of Gareth Bale, that to me answers the question about Gareth Bale. I mean, it's not like he's been there a fortnight. He's been there a long time, and he's not even getting close pretty much to the field, just about manages 10 minutes today. And the opportunity to play a guy who we think is big time would have been today. You put Gareth Bale on at half-time, and instead we get Eric Lamella. I think that's the answer to that question that Seb asked earlier.
Jürgen?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a signal of today, but you know, tomorrow is another day, so certain moments change really fast, and especially when you're a manager and you're in difficulty. So you figure out now, okay, you don't have a Harry Kane anymore. We all don't know exactly what's the situation with Dele Alli. You know, Lucas Moura was on the bench as well. So there's something to be kind of worked out there on the training pitch, and it could happen next game that Gareth Bale starts from the beginning on, maybe scores two goals that nobody expects, and the whole situation changes. But you are totally right, Stevie. As of today, the signal towards Gareth was a negative signal, no doubt about it.
Stevie, no doubt that Liverpool were great today. Are they back, though? Were you convinced on today's performance that they're true title contenders again?
Listen, they're good enough with this team that they played today to be in the top four. That's what I'll say.
That's it?
As far as winning the title, I mean, seriously, with the back line, I mean, in the first half, if Spurs had anything about them, they could have done some damage there. Because not only do they struggle when teams come at them, but Liverpool's midfield right now isn't stopping anybody getting at the back line. You know, today, again, as good as Thiago is on the ball, off the ball, he can't get around the way that the likes of Henderson can. And while you've got to play Milner, who, as great as he is and has been, he's 35 and he's not getting around as quick either. So, you know, Liverpool are not stopping teams the way they used to from getting to the back line. And so with the back line they've got, if they continue to do that, which unless they get everybody back fit, that's going to happen, then they're going to lose goals. Mm. And when you lose goals, you drop points. And when you drop points, you don't win the Premier League.
Yeah, they're going to lose Joel Matip, but it looks for at least a couple weeks. Serious is what Jurgen Klopp called it. After the match, Stevie, I don't even know what to say anymore about the centre-backs at Liverpool. There are literally nobodies left almost.
No, but you know what? Because of the attitude, because of the culture there, the players are going to get on and do the best they can, and that's what they've done. And by, you know, 90% of the time, they've done a good job. But, you know, it's not going to last forever. We've still got half a season to go, and unless they do get bodies back, then they will lose goals. And as I said previously, you lose goals and you're going to lose games.
Jürgen, what did Liverpool's performance today do for your perception of their title chances?
Well, I think it's a big moment for Liverpool. It's a turnaround. I think you're back in the race for the title, and they have the quality to do so. I think also that they have still a couple of days left, you know, to look in the transfer window and maybe make a move for a center back, maybe just on loan if there's somebody high quality out there. But that's what you have a scouting department for. So they have certainly a list of people there that they maybe, you know, are able to take on board in the short term because of the injuries they have. I think they looked really, really impressive today. They are the team that will definitely chase Man City, and I expect them to climb even more.
Stevie, some discussion whether Liverpool should go out and get a center back or not. I guess it revolves around money, but if we're talking about a true title challenge, if you can get that central defender, isn't it worth mortgaging your abstract future?
Well, there's a few teams I could throw in, the likes of Leeds, who have mortgaged their future, and look what happened to them. The Fenway Group is not about putting the future in doubt. If they have the money, then I would expect them to make it available. But if the money's not there, then they will not put the future of Liverpool in jeopardy. And quite frankly, I agree with that. You know, the way they've run the club since they came in, you can't argue with any decisions they've made. So, yeah, I'll go with them. Now, if you're asking me, go and spend the money and get a centre-back. Not just for right now, but spend the money, if you have it, on somebody who's going to be there for the next 8, 9, 10 years, which is Upamecano. So that's what I would do, but
Shaka,
I'm not on the board.
Shaka, are you impressed enough today with Liverpool to make them title contenders again, or are you with pretty much everybody else who says without that centre-back, not going to happen?
No, I'm with everybody else. I think Liverpool have shown that they're good enough, talented enough, and more to the point, their front three, Salah, Mane, Firmino, have seemed to get over their version of the yips of a few weeks ago, that they're going to score enough goals to see them finish top four. I just don't think, and everybody's touching it, no ball winners in midfield. I think there's only so much you can do with makeshift centre-halves, as decent a job as they did today, over the long run. The thing for me is I think a lot of clubs, not just Liverpool, are hurting because of this pandemic, hurting financially. And with no real end in sight, I don't expect anybody to go out and do any significant business between now and the quickly closing transfer window. So this is who Liverpool are going to have to rely on in their back four. As I say, that can only get you so far. Top four, yes. To title winners, no.
Shaka, Jurgen, Stevie, thank you very much. A reminder, don't miss tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. We're on your screen 7 days a week. Craig is in, Jan is in, and Ian Dark is in with his technology. We'll see how that goes.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We have over 800,000 subscribers, can you believe it, over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel. If you're one of them, you never miss any of the great content related to this show, and even some of the average content, like Shaka's power ranking. Speaking of, we welcome Shaka back to the show, Stevie as well. Julien Laurent joining us. Just made it back from the Spurs-Liverpool match. All right, Shaka, I've set you up nicely there. It is time for your weekly power rankings, which I'm told this week have expanded from 10 teams to somehow 11. What do you got going on?
Well, I thought I should include the 2021-2022 European champions, West Ham. This is a little bit of a precursor in a number 11. After that, I think it's as you would expect. Manchester United out after they lose to Sheffield United. Into Milan with the big result of the week, albeit in the Coppa Italia, but they're up 2. Juventus had a good result, but they're removed. Fenerbahce in after, one draw and 7 wins in their last 8. And signing Mesut Ozil, just 2 points back of Besiktas in the top of Turkey. All makes perfect sense to me. There can be absolutely no arguing with this. I'm certain.
Stevie, do your best.
Fenerbahce getting the top 10 because they signed a guy who hasn't kicked the ball for 12 months. Tell you what that is.
And how is this second in Turkey? 2 points behind Besiktas.
How can two Turkish teams be in the top 10 in the world? How's that possible? Two Turkish teams in the top 10? Seriously? Juve? What have Juve done
to tell you
fourth? Come on. Well, I didn't think you would be able to tell me because it's just daft.
Well, No, well, because they're both playing very well. 2 points separate them at the top. They're in form. Got a Scottish team in there. Nobody arguing with that.
Well, West Ham's playing. Why didn't you throw one out and put West Ham in there instead of one in? Because they're playing very well.
Well, I didn't want to jinx the mighty West Ham, is all.
Mm-hmm. Jules, yeah, you're the right. Journo. Jules, as the Journo here, can you give us some gravitas? What do you think of Xhaka's top 11?
He loves it.
To be fair, I didn't think they still existed, the power rankings. I thought by now people had realized that, you know, it was fun for a moment, but now it was time to be serious. Mm-hmm. I mean, where is Atalanta? Sure, they're the best team in, currently the team the most informed in Italy, both in Serie A and in Coppa d'Italia, if you want to focus just on this week and in Coppa d'Italia. I mean, they beat Lazio with 10 men for one half. Where is Sporting? And I did tell you last time, Xhaka, about Sporting, still unbeaten in Portugal. Surely, if you've got two Turkish teams to satisfy your Turkish fans, surely you could put Sporting. Sporting deserve to be there. They're having an incredible season.
Sporting were in a couple of weeks ago, and then they lost in the cup of things. The lower league opposition. Mm-hmm. They're out. Can't do that around here.
Oh, please. Come on.
Can't do that
around here. So did Bayern, and they're still in your top 10.
Xhaka has that weird satellite dish that only gets Turkish league games, apparently.
Oh. Oops, I didn't realize that happened to Bayern. My bad.
Jules, we're glad.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait. Don't even get me started with that.
Let's leave it there then. Let's not get you started. Jules, we have you here. We're glad to have you here. You just made it back from Spurs Liverpool. Did you get to talk to anybody after the match, and did any of them say anything interesting?
Yeah, I spoke to Robertson and Neuberg. Robertson, as always, is a great talker, very interesting. There was one thing that struck me is that he said at some point, you know, people wrote us off before tonight's game. They wrote us off. And it was almost a sense of like, okay, you said we were rubbish. You said that we could not win the league anymore. You said all those criticism, and now we answered on the pitch tonight. And he also said, this can't be a one-off. We have to build on this and keep doing this kind of performances going forward now and keeping that momentum going. But certainly it felt like all the criticism that we saw here in England about the performances, about that really bad run of results, of course, like clearly hurt them. And I even wonder if before the game, maybe Klopp used that as like, look, they're all writing you off. All of them here can't think that you're a great team. Don't think that you're a great team. Don't think that you can come back and win this title when it's still very, very tight at the top. And I think clearly in what Robertson said was like, we wanted to show people that this is the level really where we could play, where we should be playing week in and week out. And of course we had a bad run of results, and he said to me there were games where we really created chances and we lacked a bit of simplicity, maybe a bit of efficiency for sure. There were other games where we were off it, but tonight is really the real Liverpool, and now it's down to us to build on this and keep going and going and getting better. And I thought that was really good for Højbjerg. He said, when you made individual mistakes defensively like we did, you can't win a game like this. He said we try to defend forward. He thought that they were good for the first half hour, and then you lost Kane, and then you made those mistakes. And against a team like Liverpool, it's unforgivable.
If memory serves, Stevie, weren't you one of those people writing Liverpool off?
No, your memory doesn't serve you at all. No, I never wrote them off at all. I expected them to come through the funk. I said that all along. So, no, I didn't. I don't think they can win the Premier League unless they get players back. I'll say that much. But top four, they'll make the top four.
Jules, you were in the stadium. On the broadcast, we could hear just incredible amounts of shouting from the touchline coming through. But you witnessed it live. Who yelled more, Klopp in the first half or Mourinho in the second?
Both of them. I mean, Klopp, what I find really interesting is that Klopp is on Trent's back all the time, positively and negatively. But he's certainly the one who he's always there. He's always on him. So great goal, and straight after the goal, Trent, go back, in position, when he makes a mistake. Trent, this, and it was non-stop, almost like if he knew, and he knows right now that Trent, as we've been saying, is going through a more difficult patch in his career. He's still a very young player. And almost if more than anybody else in that team, he needs that sort of backing from Klopp all the time. So he stays switched on. So he's always on. And I think Klopp is always on him. And tonight, especially in a game where Alexander-Arnold had some really good moments, some more difficult moments, but it was really striking from being where I was, and I was really close to the Liverpool bench. And then Jose rostered Matt Doherty for most of the game for all the mistakes. I mean, even Joe Rodon, who is a young player, young centre back, was like, "What are you doing?" Kept saying to Matty, "Where are you going? What are you doing?" I mean, Doherty was all over the place, and it didn't help that he made that mistake on the second goal, and that Jose absolutely destroyed him.
Jules, great stuff. Appreciate the hustle. You getting back in time for the show. Jules, Stevie, and Shaka are with us on Extra Time. We get into a lot of stuff, including, I'm told, an update on Stevie's diet.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's a look at the Bundesliga table as we head to the weekend. Bayern Munich 7 points clear of second place Leipzig. You got to go all the way down to seventh to find Borussia Dortmund. Edin Terzic's side really struggling, especially on set pieces. Never more evident than last Friday. They gave up 3 goals off set pieces in a loss to Gladbach. No surprise then. Set pieces among the many topics when our Archie Rintut sat down with Terzic this week.
I know that there's not like one all-encompassing answer to these questions. I realise that it forms itself out of many different factors. So what are those factors then for set pieces and things going wrong from them? Can you explain that?
Yeah, if there would like be a blueprint for defending set pieces, then nobody would concede stupid goals after set pieces. So every weekend we're going to see teams scoring after corners, and the opposition was defending in a zone. The opposition is defending with a clear man marking system. So there is no blueprint for that. First of all, the best way to defend set pieces is not to concede set pieces. So we have to see why do we concede so many set pieces, and why do we concede them in areas where it's dangerous. Is it the corner? Is it a wide free kick? So we have to push it everything a bit higher. So if we have to make a foul, let's make it as high as possible on the pitch to avoid set pieces. But again, if a set piece come up, we have to feel the responsibility and we have to feel the confidence to defend it as a team, as a unit. And then, of course, the players have to feel comfortable. But again, everybody needs to know what he has to do. And then he can take his responsibility for that. And we're going to work on it. And we're going to work on timing. We're going to work on automatism. What are we doing in different situations? And yeah, we have to stop it because we lost 3 games through set pieces this season.
How much time during a week right now would be devoted to defending set pieces, for example?
Yeah, it's not, I can't tell you, it's 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 120 minutes, because we have individual sessions with the players where we try to find out and analyze with the individual player about the situation. How do you feel? What do you think was wrong? What do you think was missing? And then basically before every game, we have a block in our training, so it's basically match day minus one, where we are working on attacking set pieces and defending set pieces. But it's in every week at least one block, and then during pre-season and of course if you have friendly games you can work on it a bit more. But now if you have like midweek games, the time is very very the time window is very tight and close. So but at least once a week we work on set pieces.
Jurgen, Stevie, Shaka, all still with us. Jurgen, it's a simple problem for Dortmund, an obvious one. Why can't they fix it?
Well, I think coach broke it down really nicely. You know, it's about a lot of kind of small pieces coming together, and you have to be on top of those. I mean, he said, don't give the kind of the set pieces away in the first place, but it's just not doable. I mean, it will always happen that you have corner kicks against you, slightly free kicks, and so on. I mean, set pieces, as Stevie knows, we coaches know, is a mental issue. You have to be highly focused, you have to be aggressive, you have to be proactive. So especially when nowadays a lot of coaches went into the zonal defending, that means that you have to attack the ball. You have to be aware where the runners are, but at the same time you have to be ahead of them. And so alertness, focus, concentration, all these things play into the game. And it's easily said. You know, you can train that the day before a game, which a coach said there from Dortmund. But it doesn't mean that in the game they have this focus, they have this alertness. So they got to work on it. And it's often also down a little bit to the energy within a team. You know, how aggressive are they? Well, who's the leader right away? You know, is it the goalkeeper? Is it the center back? In this case, with Borussia Dortmund, it's Mats Hummels. Does he give the directives to the other players? And does he raise the bar in terms of focus and concentration and aggressiveness? And then you can do a good job, or you concede more goals.
Stevie, you've been in the manager's shoes. Are you convinced when you hear Terzic's answer?
Yeah, I mean, there's not just one. There's lots of answers, but I guess there are fundamentals, you know, and the most important one for me is attacking the ball. You know, regardless of starting position, if you don't attack the ball, then you're not going to win it anyway. So I would say that the first fundamental is attacking the ball. You know, after that, you have to get a good starting position. And that's your group, not just one person. But when the coach is talking about doing a session, then you're putting people in spots, the starting position. After that, it's down to the coach to pick the right players for the right spot. You know, I saw some of the goals that Dortmund have lost, and they've got Marco Roy standing in the front. And he would be better off standing in the halfway line because he clearly doesn't know what he's doing. And he's just kind of standing there as if he's only because he's been told to. So, you know, the coach has to get the right people in the right positions. But for me, the clearest one is aggressive attacking the ball, because you might have a team of 5'10" players. But I'll tell you what, if they put in a decent physical challenge, you don't have to win the ball. As long as you can put the guy off and make him miss the target, then you've done your job. So there's a lot of answers to it, but those for me would be the three fundamental ones.
Stevie, how do you coach aggression? You're talking about players attacking the ball. Like, are Dortmund's players just not brave enough?
No, you put responsibility on every single player. You make sure every single player has his job. And so when it goes wrong, then it's very simple to figure out who hasn't taken responsibility. And so given players like responsibility, you know, if you just take a player away on the field, then he's going to just do what he wants. But if you give him responsibility, most players like that responsibility and they'll respond to it. So that's kind of what I would do.
Shaka, it's becoming a narrative with this Dortmund squad. I think of it from the fans' perspective, but from the players' perspective, it must just be incredibly demoralizing. Every time the ball goes out of bounds for a corner kick, it's like, here we go again.
Yeah, I think that's what you can tell in all the Dortmund players' body language every time they concede a set piece, be it a free kick or a corner. I'll be honest, Seb, I think Terzic is making the issue worse. For me, looking at the goals that they've conceded from set pieces, it all comes down to a personal responsibility. And if, as a coach, you are saying that part of that personal responsibility is not conceding set pieces, what that does is it allows everybody an excuse not to defend, because I'm not the one who conceded the free kick. So I can pass that responsibility off to somebody else. And then when a corner comes in and the player who's defending at the near post doesn't win the header, I'm free of my own responsibility. I'm not going to track anybody far post. And that's how the goals seem to be going in. I think there's a confusion about what Dortmund need to do, about who needs to hold themselves responsible, and just quite simply doing their jobs. That starts with the coach, and the players for me simply haven't been big enough to meet that task head on.
Jurgen, we're talking a lot about managers here. Pretty clear Dortmund haven't improved since sacking Favre, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, obviously now they're in a transition time. Nobody knows, is he continuing his job or is there another coach coming in the short term already before the end of the season? But going back to the set pieces, this comes back to a very, very simple logic. It's who wants the ball more? And I gave my players often the example of John Terry when he played for Chelsea. He just badly wanted that ball. And every second corner kick, who was there? John Terry. So it's a mental aspect totally down. I totally agree with everyone on responsibilities. You know, you want to assume responsibility, but you badly just want to have this desire, this hunger to get the ball, especially when you defend the ball, then make sure that nobody else gets it then. Obviously, it's a difficult situation now in Dortmund, you know, because if they are not really alert enough, they might lose out on Champions League football next season, and that would be an absolute disaster for a place like that.
Dortmund, seventh, might miss out on Champions, might miss out on Europa League as well. If there is a little bit of good news for Dortmund, it's the play of their youngsters, among their many youngsters, the 18-year-old American Gio Reyna. Archie Rintut spoke with Edin Terzic about the teenager. Here's what he had to say.
Gio Reyna, he's also now had a year in the first team. What do you make of his development?
So Gio came into the first team very early, with I think 17 years of age, and you can feel it if the other players are giving you the ball, you know that he's a good player. So he can make things happen very easy. So he's very talented. He's also a hard-working player. He has a lot of room to improve himself. So that's a good situation, and to be on this level of playing in the Bundesliga at Borussia Dortmund, but still have a lot room to improve. So we are very happy with him, and we hope that he can continue like this.
How does he make that next step?
So again, he have good potential, he have good quality, but of course there are a few things that he have to improve. He have to improve his statistics in terms of being effective, scoring goals, assisting goals, pre-assists and stuff like this. How to do the things that you don't like, but you have to do it. And this is something where we try to bring him on the next level, to have a bigger impact for us, to be a bigger, how you call it, crunch time player. So in the 75th minute, nil-nil, and everybody knows, okay, we need Gio on the ball. He have the abilities for that, and we have to improve it.
Jurgen, more goals and more assists. Sounds pretty simple. How does Reyna go about doing it?
Well, he just needs to gain experience. Obviously, he needs minutes on the field. That's the most important thing at this age. And he's done, tremendously well. I mean, it's really fun to watch this kid. It's as his coach says, you know, he has tremendous potential. Working on statistics, I don't know really. I mean, can you tell now Joe Reyna to score 10, 15 goals next season? Is he ready for that? I don't think so. I think it's overall, his overall performance will just kind of step by step get better. He will improve defensively. He will be smarter tactically. You know, he will recognize certain situations faster than maybe a couple of months ago. You know, if he just keeps growing in the pace that he's growing at the moment, then we will have a lot of fun with Giovanni Reyna.
Jurgen, a lot of people curious how Greg Berhalter will use him when he finally gets to put him in the 11 in a meaningful match. Where would you play Reyna in your U.S. 11?
I think we all see Giovanni, obviously, you know, up front there with Christian Pulisic. You know, they can go left and right. They can switch sides. Both can also come through the middle. I mean, the beauty of the youngsters we have coming through from an American perspective is just that they are able to play different positions. And I think I can't wait when these meaningful games coming along to watch that new generation of U.S. players coming together.
September 2021, the World Cup qualifiers. All right, guys, plenty more Bundesliga coverage over on the website. Derek Ray with his mid-season awards article. Make sure to read it.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, that's all the time we've got for today's show. Thanks to Jurgen Klinsmann for joining us earlier. Shaka, you're not quite done yet. We still have extra time to go. Shaka, joined by Stevie and Jules as we take your questions. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Thursday edition of Extra Time on ESPN FC. I'm Sebi, and we have a great group of panelists to take your questions from social media. Steve Nichol, Julian Aran, Shaka Hislop making a weird face. As always, Stevie, first question for you. Fitting after Liverpool's 3-1 win over Spurs. As Trent Alexander-Arnold, is he Liverpool's most important player? When he has a good day, Liverpool wins. When he is having a bad day, they just do not attack like they do. What do you think, Stevie?
No, I wouldn't say the results depend on his performance, to be honest.
Who's more important?
My goodness. Do you know what? I'm going to say, since Jordan Henderson moved out in the middle of the park, they've not been as good. I don't think they've gotten the ball to the front three as quickly, and they haven't stopped the opposition getting to the back four as much as they used to without Henderson. So I would probably say Henderson right now.
No surprise there. Jules, you were actually at the match, hustled back to be part of the show. How has it been to experience the whole screaming and shouting of managers and players when you were out at the ground? We spoke about this today. Both Mourinho and Klopp were very vocal in this game.
Yeah, very. I mean, Mourinho more than usual. A lot we see Joe Sacramento, his assistant, standing up a lot and talking a lot to the players. We've seen Jose Mourinho doing it as well, but tonight I felt that he was more switched on. I mean, it was such a big game for them too, for him personally, against Klopp. But I always find it fascinating. We were just discussing it with Stevie just before. Mourinho, for example, had a go at Matt Doherty pretty much from minute one until minute 90. And the poor Doherty, because he played first as a left wing back, so he was on the left hand side, which was the side of Mourinho, but then was switched to a right back position at halftime, which meant that even the second half, he was again on Jose Mourinho's side, and he had it in his ear all the time. And because he made mistakes, because he was not very good, and like Stevie pointed out, I think he certainly looked like he really disturbed him, and he kept losing the ball, and he got worse and worse as Mourinho was just roasting him the whole game. And I don't know if Mourinho thought about that or if that worked or whatever, but certainly it felt like, I mean, Doherty had a really bad game and also Mourinho in his ear the whole time. And for Liverpool, Klopp and Trent have a very interesting, I think, relationship right now, because it feels like Klopp is on him the whole time, and probably rightly so, because we've seen how some lows he had in recent games. Alexander Arnold not really being at his best, and maybe Klopp feels that he has to always be talking to him to keep him switched on. And certainly tonight it worked, because even if defensively at times he made a few mistakes, but he was certainly better than what we saw in recent weeks.
Jules, I asked the question in the show to the guys: is Gareth Bale done in a match like this, where obviously Spurs would have needed a player with that type of skill set, and he only gets 10 minutes when it's 3-1. If not in this match, when do you think Bale's done?
Yeah, I was surprised. And then, to be fair, when he came on, he didn't really look like he was bothered anyway. And he goes back also to that sort of little incident that he had at training a couple of weeks ago, where Mourinho said, well, what do you want? Do you want to go back to Madrid and not play at all football? And I'm not sure what kind of relationship they have. I haven't heard anything. But it looks like it's not great. And it certainly looks like Bale is going to go back to Madrid. And the whole... This whole story, which looked great on paper at the beginning, and I think we all liked it, going back to your old club, and it was very romantic and all of that. So far, he has failed. The whole thing has failed.
Shaka, we would talk about Bale in Madrid. I think people use the word sad a lot, but this would be even more sad, wouldn't it?
And sad in what context?
Well, just that he's if it didn't work out in Madrid, fine, at the end, that's one thing. He goes home with a bunch of trophies and a lot of money. But if he goes back to Spurs and can't impact this team in this moment and is basically written off by Mourinho, that's even a bigger decline than we thought for Bale.
Yeah, without question. And listen, on the one hand, maybe some were willing to sympathize with Gareth Bale at Madrid, feeling that he'd never really been fully appreciated, and maybe because it was Ronaldo and it all kind of came apart at the seams and he never got a fair shot. But then you felt if anywhere he'd excel, it would be back at Spurs. And I think a lot of big clubs were prepared to take that chance on Gareth Bale. Again, because of how those relationships soured in Madrid. But if it doesn't work at Spurs, I'm not sure who is willing to take that chance again. And yeah, it does look... It is sad to see a player as incredibly gifted kind of fall in the way that he has over the last two or three years.
Stevie, is Ruben Diaz currently the best center back in the Premier League? He has completely transformed Man City's defense, and John Stones is also benefiting from him. What do you think?
I find it difficult to argue that both of them have been as good as each other, and as a pair, they absolutely have been the best centre-back pair in the Premier League since they both started playing together somewhat. Must be about, 3 months now? Mm-hmm. Is it as long as that?
You don't give Diaz the credit over Stones?
No, I think they've both been as good as each other. I think they complement each other. I think Diaz has benefited from having Stones beside him, to be honest, just as much as Stones has benefited having Diaz. So I wouldn't separate one from the other. I would say as a pair, there's no question, they're the best centre-back partnership in the Premier League by a long way.
Jules, speculation, our next question. What does Jules make of the reports of Messi and his family learning French?
Yeah, I'm teaching them. I'm even doing it on Zoom because, you know, right now he can't really come to my house. I can't really come to his house. I'm really busy as well, you know, with the children and the wife, the family, all of that. So we do it on Zooms, which is a bit challenging, I have to be honest. But yeah, you know, they're doing good. They're doing good. They're really, Antonella a little bit better than Leo, but I'm sure that by the time he signs for PSG in 6 months' time, he'll be completely fluent. And, you know, I play him like music in French and movies. So it's all going great.
Mm-hmm. Jules, we know how close you are with footballers. You got nicknames for Ney, for Greasy. What's your nickname for Leo going to be?
That's a good one. I think, you know, I think Leo right now is good. That's how I call him, you know, when we on Zoom. And he's great. He loves it. Jules and Leo, it seems to be working right now.
All right. Jules and Leo. I think the Gavin Jules show might get a new title then. Jules, another one for you. At least you'd get to talk more, right? Jules, is there any chance we see a real title race this season in Ligue 1? Are Lille legit title contenders?
Yes, of course they are. They're having a great season, and we certainly have already a lot of suspense at the top. It will be between them three, Lille, Lyon and PSG. And it's really tight. We saw Lyon going to Paris and win in the league 2 months ago. Certainly against Lille, it was a draw for Paris, and that was a really tight game. Lille have great young players, really good coach in Christophe Galtier. They have going forwards, and I think that youth and the fact that no one expected them really to be fighting for the title in Lyon is very different. Rudy Garcia, and he deserves a lot of credit, even if he's not really my cup of tea as a manager, but has changed that team. They play with so much confidence now. They used to be only about playing on the wings. Now they've got different assets to the game. It's very interesting. And then in Paris, we've got Pochettino, and he's starting slowly to put his touch on this team. The way they play that 4-2-2-2 formation is working really well. So it'll be very fascinating in the next 4 months.
Stevie, your thoughts on Lille? No, I would never do that.
Who's that?
Next question. This is a good one. Biggest team win celebration that didn't involve a trophy. So I'm guessing that's staving off relegation or a semifinal or anything really, but doesn't involve a trophy. Shaka, any big celebrations for you that didn't involve a trophy?
Big celebrations? When I was at Newcastle, we oddly went on an open top bus tour even though we didn't win the league. That was weird.
That is weird. That counts. That definitely counts as a big team celebration that did not involve a trophy. Stevie's bored.
No, I'm trying to remember the team we played against. I'm going to look it up.
Because you won all the trophies, so most of your celebrations involved, Stevie, I'm guessing, some type of hardware, right?
I'll tell you what, I played for non-league Doncaster Rovers in the for the first and only time I played in the first round proper of the FA Cup, and it was for Doncaster, and we were non-league, and we were playing, I can't remember the name of the team, down south, they were in the old third division, and we beat them 1-0, and we had about 300 fans came with us, and when the final whistle went, the whole 300 invaded the pitch, and we were all hugging and jumping up and down. It was fantastic. First round of the FA Cup for the first time ever. It's magic.
Magic of the FA Cup.
Let me add one to that, Sebi. When I was at Reading, that the 94-95 season, we got to the playoff final. We lost the Bolton after extra time, as it happens. And we, they had this big celebration, planned in Main Square. I can't remember what the square was called in town. But, you know, the team was dejected and just heading back to our own place, only to, as we get into Reading, to hear that nearly 10,000 people still showed up. Mm. So the bus had to take a detour from, you know, heading back to Elm Park, and went into the main town centre in Reading. 10,000 people. We lost the playoff final. 10,000 people still came out to kind of celebrate. Yeah.
Shaka, who was Martin Allen? Not Martin Allen, the Scouser Allen. Alvin Martin, sorry. Who was Alvin Martin the manager of?
Southend United, Stevie.
Southend, that was the team.
Look at that. Look at Seb's lower league English football knowledge coming through in the clutch. That was definitely not off Wikipedia.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Southend, yeah. I think Alvin got the bullet about 2 weeks later, unfortunately, but that was it. Southend United, first round, magic.
All right, speaking of magic, Stevie, we haven't had any updates on the diet. How is it going?
No, it's going well. I told you, it's not a diet.
It's a lifestyle change. Yeah, it's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle change. It's no beer during the week, and only Saturday and Sunday I can drink beer. And then cutting down on carbs, not 100%. I tried to do 100%, but it was really hard. But so it's a gradual thing. It's a lifestyle thing. It's not a diet.
Good, I like that. He's committed. What are the carbs you're allowing yourself, Stevie?
Just a bit of bread and butter now and again with the old homemade soup, stuff like that, you know. Yes. Not overdoing it.
Yep.
Staying off the crisps. That's no easy. No crisps and Coke. No crisps, no Coke, no beer. That's no easy.
Bread, Bread and butter, the staples to any successful diet. You heard it here first on ESPN FC's Extra Time. All right, boys, that's all for today. We will see you on tomorrow's edition of the show. Thanks to Stevie, thanks to Jules, thanks to Shaka, and thanks to you guys for sending us all these great questions.